This is West Virginia Morning. I'm Beth Voorhees. If you've got a concern about West Virginia's education standards, now you can tell the state about it. A new website was launched yesterday to take comments from the public about West Virginia's version of the Common Core education standards. State education officials are hoping that if they do a comprehensive review and make some adjustments, lawmakers won't repeal them. Ashton Mara reports.
July marks 1 year since the Next Generation Content Standards and Objectives took full effect in West Virginia. The standards are West Virginia's adaptation of Common Core, which sets standards for what students should know by the end of each grade level. The Next Generation Standards were adopted by the State Board of Education in 2010, but this past school year was the first time they were implemented in all classrooms at all grade levels throughout the state. About halfway through the school year, though, Republican lawmakers in the House passed a bill to repeal the standards. They argued parents are having a hard time helping their kids with their homework under the new guidelines, and they don't want national groups dictating what gets taught in West Virginia's schools. But the repeal effort failed on the final night of the session. Still, that doesn't mean State Superintendent of Schools Dr. Michael Martirano forgot about the effort, nor the conversations that surrounded it. Of the various versions of the repeal bill, Martirano says,
I have all of those committed to memory, basically, and understand them in great detail. And we had two options. We could have turned a deaf ear to that work and said, we don't need to tend to that. Or we could take it in a very proactive manner to be collaborative and supportive of each other to say, we're operating as if those bills passed.
The Senate version of the bill called for a comprehensive review, and that's what the Department of Education is doing. The first step in that process, an online public comment period, began yesterday. A state-created website allows parents, teachers, anyone with concerns about the standards to view them by grade level or subject. If there's a specific standard a person takes issue with, they're provided the opportunity to comment on that standard. Martirano says they're looking for constructive criticisms of the standards that can ultimately be used to revise them.
So this is a way to have a statewide town hall meeting of the 1.8 million citizens to have an opportunity to weigh in. And tell us how we can improve the standards and make them better.
The comment period lasts through the end of September. Then West Virginia University will analyze the responses and give them to appointed advisory groups made up of stakeholders. The advisory groups, under the guidance of the university, will write recommendations for revisions to the standards. Those are due to the State Board of Education by December. In all, the Department of Education estimates the five-month review process will cost about $300,000. WVU is providing services from their employees in kind and is also trying to raise money through grants to help pay for the review. While officials said they could not provide specific dollar amounts Wednesday, they've already received donations from the Southern Regional Education Board, the Benedum Foundation, and the National Governors Association, or NGA. The NGA was also one of the groups that developed the National Common Core Standards. Still, $300,000 is a lot less than the $113 million the department predicted it would cost to replace the standards altogether. But during June interim meetings, the Joint Committee on Education was presented with a draft bill that once again called for a full repeal. So will the effort be for naught?
Well, the simple answer is I surely hope not.
Martirano says he hopes his review proves the department heard the legislature's message loud and clear and that they're working to make the standards the best they can be for West Virginia students. For West Virginia Public Broadcasting, I'm Ashton Mara in Charleston.
Coal production from mines using mountaintop removal has decreased 62% from 2008 to 2014. That figure was released this week by the U.S. Energy Information Agency. Taylor Kirkendall, coal reporter for SNL Energy, an online news service, says the coal industry is facing a perfect storm. Low demand, federal regulations, competition from natural gas, and pressure from campaigns against the mining practice from environmental groups have all taken their toll. We spoke with Taylor Kirkendall about the news. Was this decrease, as reported by the Energy Information Agency, a surprise to you as someone who reports on the coal industry?
Actually, it was not. First, I mean, you have what's kind of shaped up to be a terrible market for coal all the way around. Natural gas prices and the persistent trend kind of moving away from coal use in the U.S. has really limited the use of coal across the nation. So now when you also zoom into the state-by-state and regional trends we've been watching for a while, you can kind of see that West Virginia, Kentucky, and more broadly Central Appalachia has really kind of bore the brunt of the production and employment decline. It just so happens these happen to be the regions where mountaintop removal has been more frequently conducted. It's also important to note that that does not mean, you know, surface mining in general has declined as rapidly. Surface mining, mountaintop removal, not necessarily the same thing. Surface mining has only fallen by about 21% since 2008 compared to the 62% drop that we're looking at in mountaintop removal. And surface mining has its own detractors. You know, there's an argument out there that it poses similar health and environmental risks. Some of those techniques just haven't reached the same level of scrutiny. But for an example, why this may not have been a surprise, look at the highly controversial spruce mine permit that Arch Coal was hoping to build in Logan County. They got the initial go-ahead from the U.S. Army Corps of Engineers, but ultimately the U.S. EPA stepped in, and they just believed that there's going to be too much damage caused by this mine, and they decided to exercise a veto, which is something they haven't used much before. And while that litigation continues, so far the industry has not had much luck in getting that permit moving forward.
Is the industry's reaction to this news pretty predictable? Too many regulations, too many rules?
Definitely. And I don't believe that they were really surprised by this either. They've known for a while that this was coming out. I mean, they've been trying to get these permits. They're not able to get them. And then, of course, you know, they've been subject to all this litigation. Of course, the idea that, you know, that I think many of them have come to accept that the coal industry is probably not going to spring back to the way it was. And, of course, they're realistic about natural gas being a problem. But, I mean, I think that they've just gotten such a kind of faced regulatory fatigue to the point that this is kind of probably not much news for them.
What role, if any, has the environmental community and the efforts against mountaintop removal mining had on this decline?
Yeah, so I think environmentalists have played a very large role in the patterns we're seeing around mountaintop removal. And while I don't think they may not always be quick to take credit for some developments in the industry, I think this is one where they are stepping up and saying that they believe that they've had a role in this. Look at a company like Patriot Coal. During their first bankruptcy, environmental groups were able to leverage a court win over selenium pollution into a settlement in which the Patriot decided they would back off mountaintop removal in exchange for a delay on costly selenium cleanup. At the time, the Patriot CEO, Ben Hatfield, you know, said that's an area we were planning to exit in our business anyway. He said that the regulatory resistance and the volatility in trying to predict when you could start your mine, whether you can continue your mine, and what was going to happen with that permit was just so great that coal companies didn't really want to participate anymore. Even Alpha Natural Resources in their annual reports are saying, you know, when we did mountaintop removal, we tried to restore the land as best as possible, but they say that they didn't do any in 2014, and they have no plans to do so in 2015. I think these court cases in which environmentalists have been able to win major settlements on selenium or conductivity has not only made mountaintop removal just a really expensive proposition, but really a risky one.
But even with this decrease, there's still plenty of coal coming from mountaintop removal mines, isn't there?
There is. And, of course, it's not the largest part of our coal production. If you look at the information released from the EIA yesterday, looking to just over 20 million tons of mountaintop removal coal produced in 2014 in Central Appalachia. Most of that is in West Virginia. But according, if you look at other EI data, you can see over the past couple of years, countries produced just shy of a billion tons of coal. And their data browser right now says that, you know, 57 million tons were produced from all surface mining coal operations in Central Appalachia in 2013, while about 70 million tons came from underground mines. So in other words, you know, the underground mining and other forms of surface mining produce more coal than mountaintop removal mines. I mean, we're talking about 30 or so mines here that are producing a very large chunk of coal from the Central Appalachia region.
Taylor Kirkendall, coal reporter for SNL Energy in Charlottesville, Virginia. Thank you very much.
Great. Thank you very much. Appreciate being on.
This is West Virginia Morning at 7:53. Dense fog this morning, cloudy skies in the north today, partly sunny in the south. Be aware of some scattered rain and thunderstorms that could pop up. Some of these storms could produce heavy rain and gusty winds. Temperatures in the 70s and low 80s today. Scattered rain and thunderstorms tonight with lows in the 60s. Partly cloudy tomorrow with a slight chance of rain and thunderstorms. Temperatures in the 70s and low 80s.
Support for West Virginia Public Broadcasting is provided by the West Virginia Division of Rehabilitation Services, enabling and empowering workers with disabilities to meet business workforce needs. Employer services at wvdrs.org.
It's been 4 years since the All Good Music Festival has been in West Virginia. After spending almost a decade in Preston County, then 2 years in Ohio, and taking a hiatus last year, the festival comes back this year to Jefferson County. It begins today and ends Sunday. While the festival is popular for its lineup of big-name bands and relaxed atmosphere, it's also developed a reputation for heavy traffic and drugs. Liz McCormick looked into the festival's return to West Virginia and brings us this report.
The All Good Music Festival and Campout has been around for almost two decades, with a fan base that's grown tremendously since its inception. Tim Walther, the founder and organizer, began the festival in Maryland in 1997, where it stayed for a few years. In 2000, it started moving around, and then in 2003, landed in Masontown in Preston County, where it remained for 8 years. During its time in Preston, the festival grew from about 6,000 people in the beginning to around 23,000 in 2011. It became clear, however, the location wasn't equipped for that many people. In the festival's final year in Preston, a vehicle accident left one woman dead and two others injured. All Good moved to Thornville, Ohio the next year, where it stayed until 2013. Last year, All Good founder Tim Walther announced the festival would take a year-long break and search for a new home closer to its original base in the Baltimore, D.C. area. He says some fans just weren't willing to make the 370-mile trip to Thornville.
You know, the aesthetics out there, the setting wasn't quite the magical setting that our fans were accustomed to, sitting on top of a mountain now in Preston County.
This year, the festival is at Berry Hill Farm at Summit Point, near Charlestown in Jefferson County. Back in Preston County, Commissioner Dave Price remembers when the festival was in Masontown. Jefferson County Sheriff Pete Daugherty says the new location in Jefferson County is well suited for large volumes of people.
Given the proximity of where we are and the roads that we have, we're not in a position where it's a one road in, one road out that was never designed to have significant amounts of traffic.
Daugherty says several law enforcement agencies will be working overtime to deal with the festival.
Between all of that effort, we believe there'll be something in the neighborhood of 125 to 140 law enforcement people who will be doing it.
Daugherty says taxpayers won't have to pick up the tab for all the overtime. The festival will. He also says an additional 200 internal security officers provided by the festival will be on site. Some of them will be out of uniform to blend in. Tim Walther says he's happy the festival is returning to West Virginia and says the Jefferson County location will provide much easier access for festival goers than in Preston County.
It's a great location for emergency access. It's a great location for people to come from all directions, from South, Northern Virginia and D.C., from Baltimore and Philadelphia, from Lancaster and South Central PA and Pittsburgh.
He says U.S. Route 340 wraps around the site.
So it's just plenty of access and plenty of main thoroughfares to get people in and out. I don't expect anybody to wait for more than an hour to get in. I'd be kind of surprised if they wait for an hour.
Another issue following the festival, however, is drug use. Preston County officials made hundreds of arrests during the festival's time there, mostly for misdemeanor drug possession. Sheriff Daugherty says he's been working closely with county officials and the festival to keep as many drugs out as possible.
We expect that almost everybody who comes to this event wants to simply come and have a good time, camp out, and listen to the music that they want to hear. If they're here for some other purpose, we encourage them to stay home or go somewhere else.
He says he's organized multiple canine units to work the festival.
We will do lots of things to do drug interdiction before people arrive on scene. And we will do a lot to make sure that anybody who does manage to get any drugs in on site will be arrested and prosecuted.
This year, some high-profile bands are on the lineup, including Primus, Moe, and Cake. Around 11,000 festival-goers are expected to attend. Walther says many fans miss the location in Preston County, but he hopes this new location in Jefferson will become a permanent space and provide that same magical getaway. For West Virginia Public Broadcasting, I'm Liz McCormick in Shepherdstown.
West Virginia Morning is a production of West Virginia Public Broadcasting, which is solely responsible for its content. Keep up with all the latest West Virginia news throughout the day on our website, wvpublic.org. Support for our news bureaus comes from Shepherd University, West Virginia University, Marshall University, and Concord University. Our producer is Ashton Mara. Our director is Teresa Wills. I'm Beth Voorhees.